Hello, and welcome to episode 249 of Checkpoint Chat. I've forgotten how to do this, but my name is Alessandro Barbosa. I'm joined by Matthew Figuera.
Same. I just realized that you see, look to your top left. Okay, not in real life. You see the little flashing block.
The little flashing block?
So look at the feed I'm giving to you on your webcam to your top left. So
yeah.
For video list of viewers, it's I can't point at it.
I see nothing. I see nothing.
Okay, I can see it. I'm going to make it go away quickly. So hang on.
I thought you were talking about the fact that you have sunlight in the background for a change.
Now know that it's gone. Now it's gone. Apologies for that. It's been a very long time since we've done this.
How are you doing?
Good, and you?
You've traveled the world since we last recorded, I think.
The whole world, man.
Yeah, Phineas Fig over here.
Went south. Then back north.
I mean, that counts. You crossed the equator twice.
Did I go east or west? Just went south. It's all good. I went slightly east.
There's nothing important in the east and the west.
Went slightly east. I went to Kenya. It was very confusing in terms of if I looked at my ticket. So I flew Air Kenya. Went via Kenya. Kenya is 3 hours ahead of the UK. Okay.
But then South Africa's
2 hours ahead. So, which makes you, my trip was, I'm going forward 3 hours and then back an hour, which is very confusing.
Your trip here. Yes.
Yeah. It's looking at my ticket like, man, what is this layover? Why am I arriving at this time? Man, this is, and it's like, no, it's because of the damn time differences. Very confusing. But I made it.
I don't even look at the times like on the tickets. I just, when I book the ticket, I know I'm going to be at this place for like 5 hours as a layover, because trying to figure out the times, especially if you're traveling to like, I mean, you'd know, like traveling to the States or something, it's impossible. Like, it's an absolute nightmare trying to figure out when you're going to land, what you're going to, yeah. So,
well,
that's cool. You were here for like 2 weeks.
Barely left. It was there in December.
it's actually funny.
Like, just because the 3 months went so quickly between December and March, it's like I hadn't left. But it was really
3 months is nothing. Yeah.
Really, really good to see family again, see you guys, and be there for your wedding. Nice to be.
That was great.
It was sunny SA because it was pretty chilly. Still in the UK.
And it was scorching hot here. Oh my god, it was so. It's actually cooled down considerably just this week. Like, it's been hot since you left was like 2 weeks ago, so it wasn't that long ago. But it's now finally getting a bit cold, which is super nice. I'm welcoming it.
And I bet
in like May when it's winter, I'm going to be like, where's the heat?
Days are longer this side, which is great. Just good and bad.
I hope you don't have a horrendous summer like you guys did last year, because I know the UK went through some shit in summer.
I mean...
And I understand your loft life, because I walk up one set of stairs and I feel the temperature go up by a few degrees.
Oh, my God.
So you going up 3 flights, I can only imagine.
In winter, it is bliss. Because you arrive, you're like, man, it's cold. You walk up like,
When I was at you in November, it was delightful in your
really,
flat.
Really
it was
nice.
So nice. And then... Fuck cold when we went outside, like so cold. Summer must be a bit brutal.
Yeah, well, we'll see. It's not meant to be brutal. It's meant to be
temperate,
mild, drizzly.
You're gonna scorching, test the limits of your baby PC's cooling again.
It was the worst actually, because when. I built my PC when I arrived, or whatever, and then like I didn't really do anything on it for the first few weeks. But then sort of when I was playing Starfield, it's like, oh man, like I've got to really like take a look at this cooling, make sure it works. And I was busy monitoring it during like the hottest time ever. And I was like, guys, my PC is falling apart. It's too hot.
Yeah, I've done something wrong. Which, I've installed this liquid cooler incorrectly.
Which, to be fair, was I knew I needed more circulation on the bottom because there was no fan pushing air from the bottom.
Yes.
But all that said, like I put the fan in like a week after the heat wave had passed. So I'm like, oh, things are fine. But I'm like, shit, what if it's back in summer and it's not fine? I think it'll be fine. But it was just the timing was bad. So I'm like, guys, this thing's actually melting. Yeah, I mean,
if the ambient temperature is like really, really high, like of course you're just going to have a bad time with that because it's just like sucking in hot air.
Mm.
But it seems to be good now. I remember when I visited you, you were like, oh yeah, this thing's like, it's totally fine. It's chilled.
I think it's fine. We'll see like on the hottest of hot days what the thermals look like. But it's getting air. I mean, I'm not going to really do anything else at this stage. I just won't game.
And you don't have a 4090 in there, so it's not like absolutely wrecking anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Michelle, so how does it feel to be married?
Yeah. It's weird. Like, so many people ask me that, even like just yesterday, they're like, oh, it's been like 2 weeks. How does it feel? And I'm just like, yeah, it's like, it's good. It's definitely good. It's good to have things like formalized and, you know, to be, formally like married to your partner. But yeah. Shani and I lived together for like 3 years.
I am.
So from a day to day, it didn't feel any different. It was actually kind of weird the day after. We were just like, oh, so we just chilling now, I guess, you know. No, but it's good. I mean you had similar. You lived with Lenska prior to getting married, so
yeah,
I'm sure you felt similar.
It was also funny for us because like we did the legal thing here in South Africa like a week before the party in Madeira. So it was like we're legally married, we live together, which we've done. Then we're going to go have a party abroad, and like we got back like, huh, this is still the same as it was before we left.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy. It's really great. And I, you know, definitely would advise people do it, put it that way. But yeah, I guess if you're living with your partner like previously, it doesn't feel immediately different, but I would not take the opposite and do the, you know, everyone's circumstances are different and, you know, tradition and religion come into play. But if I was given the choice, I would never choose to get married and then only move in, because I think that is a lot of stress on the two people involved to kind of like figure that out in the wake of just being married. So
yeah,
do you prefer this method?
100%. It's because living with someone is very different to dating them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I do tend to think that by the time you're getting married, you should at least know the person well enough to think like you will probably be compatible when you move in together. But I think there's still teething issues, because especially if one person's got like a place and the other person is moving into that place. So now it's like one person's comfortable in that space and the other one's got to like make a space for themselves there. It's tricky. My good friend Marco, who you met at the wedding, who's a groomsman, he's getting married next week.
They don't live together, hey?
No, they're very very staunch Catholic households. Okay. So
yeah,
I mean, she's come over, she stayed over, stuff like that, but he's got a house that he owns and she's going to move into that house. So it's like, I think it's tough. And you know, I've spoken to both of them about it, and I think they're both completely aware that it will be an adjustment, which is good. I think if you go in thinking, oh god, this is going to be easy, then you're probably setting yourself up for a bit of failure there. But yeah, no, it's tough. I wouldn't, like, the one thing I wouldn't want to worry about immediately after a wedding is like, okay, I need to move. Like, that seems like like a bit much, you know what I mean?
Oh, wait, so, guest, before you go home, can you grab a cardboard box and stuff?
Yeah, just grab a box. We need to move all this shit from one car to the other. Yeah, thank you.
Trust me, there's pizza at the end of this tunnel.
So other than that, it feels great. There's definitely a post-wedding high that you're on that feels really good. And now it's just about like figuring out what the next 5, 10, 20 years are like. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, like, actually, no. The immediate thing is figuring out where we're going on honeymoon. So that's
a nice thing to figure out.
It's true. It's true. But sometimes planning travel, or at least for me, it gives me anxiety because I'm like, I need to be sure that I'm making the right plans, you know?
No, I get that. But yeah. Yeah, it's funny. The amount of time and effort that goes into a wedding day and then it's done, you're like, huh.
Yeah.
What now?
I 100% believe people who said like it flies by and you need to like cognizantly like be present. You need to make sure that you are there mentally, you know, otherwise you're just going to miss everything. And I feel like I tried my best to do that. And even then it just flew by.
I didn't give you enough of these unreal. In the day.
Just like, are you focusing? it's insane because I think you as the bride and the groom, you're so busy, you know, you're taking photos, you're doing this.
It's nonstop. Like even
it's really nonstop.
Even like the act of eating, it's like, well, eating is probably like the only time you get to sit. And like you sit and you eat, and then it's like, okay, cool, now you're doing your first dance, or you're just doing this or that, or you need to go cut the cake or do this or that. Yeah, it really flies by. I mean, and that's why I think it's like an unspoken law. If you are married, you'll tell people getting married that they must enjoy their day and like pause and take it in, because like it does just fly by. So
and like I think we enjoyed the day for sure, but like I look at a lot of photos of the reception, I was like, when did any of this happen? Where were we? What were we doing?
How much whiskey did you drink before the
And I felt bad because you want to socialize with a lot of your guests, especially ones that have, you know, there were a lot of people there who had traveled very far. I mean, yeah, look at that. And
you
like,
barely said
you
a word
kind of feel guilty.
I'm joking.
Yeah, you kind of feel guilty that you like haven't said a lot to these people who, it was a strange thing.
Let me let you in a life secret. It's a day about you and not about the people. So as long as you and Charlie were with each other and doing your thing.
No, we enjoyed. It was a lot of stress off our backs at the end of it. So yeah, and everything went like super smoothly. Which was and a lot of it happened without us having to like get involved, so that was
wedding
like an
planner.
A+. Oof. Yeah, so good, so good.
Ran a tight ship as all wedding planners do.
Yeah, she was so good on the ball the whole night. And she was like, she's like 7 months pregnant, and she was just up and down,
impossible to tell, honestly.
Yeah. No, she was really good, and yeah, worth every penny. If you ever at the beginning of a wedding like planning thing and you're like, wow, wedding planner seems like a lot of money, just do it. Just take the hit, do it. It
can
will save you immense amount of stress and time. Like it's worth every penny. Anyway, we're both married now. We also both played some games.
Are you wearing your ring?
Time. It's actually my car. I took it off for the gym and I forgot to put it back on. So I actually need to get it resized. It's too big. I need that as
no,
well.
No, it's funny because we'll move off your wedding now, but it's just funny. Like wearing a ring takes getting used to, but I still stand by it's the best fidget toy. Like I love my ring.
Oh, dude, it's insane.
Because I am a fidgeter, and having a ring on hand to just be like, yay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I thought after a week I'd be like, oh, you know, I'm bored of playing this thing now. It's just not.
I know.
The whole day I'm constantly taking it off, I'm putting it back. Like even in conversation, I'm just there like fiddling with it. Like
100%. But me, just like you, when I'm home, it comes off. It goes in its little stand, and when I go out, I put it back on.
It gets scratched very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Which makes a ton of sense. It's on your hand. But like I was looking at mine and I polish it and it looks nice, but there's like scratches on there.
Enjoy
and I'm like,
it,
cool. So every year I'm just going to get it buffed. Yeah. Oh.
I need to get mine
but
polished.
But it's nice. We've both got quite chunky rings. I mean, yours is incredibly chunky given it's like two.
Yeah.
But I really like the thickness of it because it feels like substantial. Feels
what,
really good.
What material is yours again?
Platinum.
Nice.
Yours is the same, isn't it?
So it's got that weight.
No. Yeah, it's heavy. Like but now it's weird. Like initially it felt very heavy. Now when I take it off, my hand feels super light. And yeah,
the finger abdominal muscles, little six pack.
Oh, they're there. So strong right now. If I use my ring finger to press L2 on a controller, I'm just going to break it.
Shit, just calm down.
Yeah, those adaptive triggers on the PlayStation controller going to see built. Flames.
Not built for ring fingers. Good God.
Video games. There's been quite a four. There's actually been so many of them that we just haven't been able to keep up with. Like, if I have to think off the top of my head, I would like to play Dragon's Dogma. Haven't touched that yet. We got
Dragon's Dogma 2, I play that?
We got the Rise of the Ronin Code, which we haven't even bothered redeeming that? Because, like, there was something else. I still want to play Like a Dragon, but I don't have time for that. Oh, there was something else, and I'm forgetting it. There was like another big game this month. I don't know. There's just been so many. Helldivers, I want to play a lot more of.
Man, Democracy.
But the thing that we've both been playing, you more so than me, because I've just been chipping away at it slowly, is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which came out literally a month ago today that we recorded.
The day I left.
Which is crazy to me. Crazy that it's been a month since all of that started. Oh, look at that. You're using the same sword as me. Nice. This game is gigantic.
It's massive.
In a way that I wasn't expecting.
No.
I knew it was going to be open world. I did not expect... I mean, I'm in the grasslands, which did you ever play Dragon Age Inquisition?
No.
Okay, so in Dragon Age Inquisition, there is a starting area, which is like... Because Dragon Age Inquisition is what I assume very similar in structure to Rebirth, in that you've got open world hubs, essentially.
Okay.
And once you move on from one, you can't come back to it.
Okay.
Or can... I don't know. So Inquisition was similar. So there was a... The very first open world hub was called the Hinterlands. And it was... It became like a running joke that people refused to leave the Hinterlands because they just tried to like get everything and anything they could done there before moving on. So there were players who were spending like 40 hours in what was essentially the tutorial area.
Oh,
and that's like to me a failure in design, because the game should really be like, you should fucking move on from this. Like, you haven't even established the Inquisition, which is the namesake of this game. Like, sort of thing. But as soon as I entered the grasslands in Rebirth, I got immediate Hinterland vibes. I was like, this is the beginning of the story, and there is so much to do here.
It
is. So I'm like, should I move on? Should I just focus on the main story? Should I do all these little markers on the map? What did you end up doing there?
Because I'm a big Final Fantasy VII fan, being someone who played the original in its heyday, I want to do everything this game has to offer.
Of course.
I will play every mini game. I will do every side quest. I don't care how long it takes me. Like, I want to enjoy all of that. So I did everything in the grasslands. Time of recording, I'm in the next area. So if you're watching the video feed, it's Junon.
Junon?
This is Junon, yeah. It's like the Junon open world part of the game. And I've just about ticked everything off. So if you want just raw time, 20 hours to tick off both those open worlds.
That's
and
wild.
Do you know, the chapters in between. It's okay. It's a lot of content, but I mean to alleviate any worry you might have about like, oh no, if you move on you can't come back, you can go back to past areas.
That's quite nice.
Yeah,
okay.
Like the you do, I think it's a side quest or something you do, and then you unlock the means to travel back and forth. I assume that will carry through most of the game, where you can go back to past areas. So if you're worried about like, oh God, like am I gonna miss anything, like don't. You can move on, do some main quest, come back, whatever. But I'm ticking off all the side quests. And I think each area, and remember, I've only done two of, I don't know how many there are. I assume there'll be quite a bunch. Each area has like five side quests over and above the main whatever objectives. And they take a couple hours to do. And yeah, it's I think just to go back to what you started with, this game is massive. To the point where I think... every 5 minutes, and I'm not even joking, I just say to myself, like, how is this game real? Because, like, Remake, we knew, okay, they did Midgar, but Midgar is like, it's one place, right? And even then, they made it seem so much bigger than, like, the original Final Fantasy. But I think I speak for myself and many other fans who are like, yeah, but how does it translate to the open world? Like, surely Midgar is like a lucky break. It's a singular area. Obviously, they're going to make it, you know, so detailed, whatever. But I found that from what I've played, that they just, I don't know how they've done it. This game is huge, and it feels like there's just so much life in, you know, every area you walk in. Calm is a good example. The opening town.
Oh, the opening city. Yeah, it's
oh
fantastic.
My God. Like in the base game, the original game, Calm is like, it's a town you pop into, and then you do that whole story beat where you see Cloud with Sephiroth back in Nibelheim, and you move on from Calm. Like, that's it. It's honestly this like sleepy little town. In this game, the moment they let you walk around the town, I was just like, holy shit, it's like this huge sprawling city filled with people. And I'm like, if this is the first town, like,
and lots of cool conversations between
conversations
all the people you walk past.
Yeah, and even I was just like, if this is the first town, and I know it's a small sleepy town, like, what's it going to be like when I get to actual Junon, like, which is this massive city, Costa de Sol, like this beach side town, the Golden Saucer, which is like this entertainment resort. I'm like,
I've heard a lot about Costa del Sol. I'm excited to get
there.
Yeah,
but I'm just like thinking, I haven't seen anything, thank goodness, like spoilers, whatever. I'm just like, those I know are like bigger areas. How does that translate into Rebirth? And sorry to hog the mic, but we're even just you talking about the conversations, like, I stand by what I've said with Remake, that these Final Fantasy games, they nail the feeling of a city being alive. I get it. Yeah. Even though people say the same thing over and over again when you run past them, the fact that they're like literal dozens of people all doing their thing and like having conversations, it doesn't feel empty. Like, the towns feel alive and bustling. And I'm like, I can't tell you many games other than like a Cyberpunk, for example, where it feels like, oh my God, like I'm in the city at the moment. It's unreal.
I think it's even beyond like a Cyberpunk, because I remember when Cyberpunk was first being shown to press at E3, they made a really big deal about like, oh, every NPC has like a routine. They are living a life. They are, if you follow, like, I distinctly remember this. They're like, if you follow an NPC throughout the day, you'll see them go about their day. And I'm like, that's nice. But when I eventually played the game, what I encountered was walking past a lot of identical looking NPCs, because like the randomization on offer there was quite bad.
Yeah.
But they were not talking. They were not interacting. They were just people that walked by. So Final Fantasy's approach of having less people around but denser feeling cities with people that are engaged in actual conversations about particular topics, it fleshes out the city around you. Like, I know that Calm has the small district where people are selling lots of sweets, because that seems to be a thing that is popular to that town.
Yeah.
I had a bit of a chuckle that one of the voice lines was like, zero calorie sweets. Yeah. And I'm like, come on, is anyone in this world actually caring about like their calorie intake right now? Like, but it's like little moments like that bring like a smile to your face, because they're just like interesting and you know, like, memorable in many different ways. So yeah, I fully agree with you in that. I think that's where the strength was in Remake, especially when you got to what was the district, the casino district, or
like the entertainment district in the
entertainment district. Like when you got there, whatever. It was like so bustling and so cool. The open world aspect of this is what's interesting to me, because it is like they have their own take on like the Ubisoft towers, you know what I mean? Mm. Like you unlock a tower and it shows points of interest around you. And there's little open world activities or short and brief, which I think are really cool. It's like, analyze this crystal or fight this enemy with like specific objectives attached to it. Or repair chocobo stops. So that's all neat. And I appreciate that you can fast travel almost anywhere on the map without restriction. Like you don't have to you don't have to have done a certain thing or have a certain item to fast travel. I think that makes getting around the map so much better, especially in the wake of Final Fantasy 16, which did not have that, where you could only travel to specific ruins and then you just had to fucking run around to like specific parts of the map. I appreciate this approach a lot more. I mean, I'm only like 5 hours in. I'm still getting the hang of the party dynamic. I like that you can switch between... I've only got 5 party members at the moment. I'm almost certain that's going to change, knowing certain characters are missing currently. But I like being able to switch between pre-made party configurations on the fly. So I can have like Aerith or Tifa, or I can then have Barret and Tifa, or Red 13 and Aerith, or like just ready to go and switch them outside of battle. I'm still with Tifa and Aerith. I'm not entirely sold on Aerith on this game. I felt like she was super, super strong in Remake and like indispensable. But here I don't know. I think Tifa's probably the best character to play as still.
Whatever.
What's your composition? Oh, Red. Okay, fair enough. Red is pretty cool.
No, so it's funny because I'm playing kind of like after having played my first playthrough of the game, we all know spoilers that Aerith dies in the original. So any time I played Final Fantasy VII after it, I was like, I will have her in my party because I'm not going to have her forever.
Just until that moment.
and I just really love Red. So I'm running with my original. It's predominantly Red and Aerith.
Interesting.
Yeah, man, I'm very interested to know how... I mean, we know how Yuffie plays because we've had the DLC, but I'd love to know how the other characters play in this game. Like, how have they translated into this modern retelling of this game? I love
it. Do you want to talk a bit about so the big change here, which I just played Intermission just a few weeks ago in prep for this Yuffie stuff, and I never realized that they sort of started playing around with synergy abilities in that DLC, but it's been expanded upon like greatly in Rebirth. And that's kind of the core mechanic that has been added to the combat.
I mean, I don't know how much you've dabbled with it yourself. I mean, because you're still pretty early days. I think it's interesting. I'm still also, I mean, this sounds ridiculous, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm 20 hours in, but also in terms of the overall game, like, I'm still early days, if that makes sense. Like, I've still got a lot of content to get through, still a lot of stuff to unlock.
So no, this is like double the time of Remake. This is like an 80-hour game as opposed to 40.
I'm still like the synergy abilities, I'm still figuring them out. But they are very cool in that they give effects to your party. Like, for example, if you do a certain attack with Cloud and Red, like you can extend their ATB gauge up to 3 for like a certain time, whatever. Or there are other effects where I think like you do a synergy, your MP cost is 0 for the rest of the fight or whatever. But what's interesting is building up to these synergy abilities, you have to cast spells or do things. Like you have to expend ATB bars.
On certain
abilities to like build up a whole separate gauge as well. So it just adds like, I think Remake already had a level of complexity to it. This just adds like another layer to it. And it's interesting, I know I'm diverting a bit, but you mentioned the difficulty in the game, saying like it's a bit easy, which is fair. Like I think I haven't really hit my head against the wall unless I've done like some of the summon fights maybe too early before I've analyzed.
Yeah, those summon fights are brutal.
But can I tell you where this game really shines? And I still don't know if I'm going to do it maybe one day, is if you play it in hard mode. So I platinumed
Seven
Remake I wanted to platinum it, but one of the trophies was you have to replay the whole game on hard mode, and I was like, oh man, like that's an annoying trophy, but I like the game enough that I'm going to do it. And I found with hard mode that really, really, really made the combat system shine, and it forced you to learn it, because then it was no longer just this thing of like, yeah, I guess I can attack and like cast some spells and do whatever. That was like, okay, now like, what is the weakness of this enemy? How do I pressure them? What sort of equipment should I have? And I feel that Rebirth probably will have the same thing where, like, I'd love to play it in hard mode. I don't know if I will. But
yo, another 80 hours, yeah.
But, like, how do synergy abilities play into that? Because, again, combat's completely different. Like, how heavy do I have to rely on my synergy abilities? Whereas now it's like a nice, it's like fireworks. It's just, it's a nice to have, looks cool, mm-hmm. but I'm not like dying to use an ability, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's why I was talking about the difficulty in Discord is not because I think like the easy nature of it is taking away from it. I think it's because I want to engage with the synergy stuff a lot more, but the battles aren't lasting long enough for me to get there because the synergy abilities often require like two or three abilities from each character involved in the ability itself, you know, to have been played out in the battle. And usually by the time you've done even half of that, you've killed every enemy. So like you don't even get the chance to build up that gauge. And I feel like I'm missing out on a lot of potential complexity because, you know, I'm never in the position where I'm like, okay, what synergy ability do I need here? Do I need the unlimited MP one? Do I need an additional ATB gauge? Do I just need this specific amount of damage on one enemy? And, you know, the only other difficulty option you have is called adaptive. And I'm not entirely sure what that does. Like, I don't know if it adapts every enemy to your current level where, you know, in the open world, they might have fixed levels and you're just like blowing past them because you're like three or four levels above them. It could be, but yeah, I've heard anecdotally that it can like bridge that problem where like it does require a bit more complexity to get around. But like you said, the summon battles are incredibly difficult. Like you will, you know, you have to pick your party and your materia correctly to tackle them. And I think some of the story engagements, at least the bosses early on, have definitely given me that sort of like complexity that I'm craving. It's just the open world
it's like
blowing past it. Yeah. But again, like maybe it's a good thing because if you're coming across random enemies so frequently in the open world and every battle's like a 3 to 5 minute thing that you have to really think about, that's going to burn you out very quickly.
Yeah.
So think, yeah, maybe it's just a good balance.
Yeah. I also think it's early days for you where I think maybe in terms of design, like I don't know if I'm speaking rubbish, but maybe they've also intentionally made like the opening area just like a breeze so people can wrap their heads around. Because like, I mean, not to say that the next area is like particularly difficult or whatever, but I've had fights where it is like, okay, I need to, you know, at least have some sort of strategy or look at what the enemy's weaknesses are or whatever, and I get to use
I came across that yesterday in a small side quest with Kiri, yeah. We had to repair some like Mako tunnel or something. Enemy that popped up was this poisonous mushroom thing, and it fucking obliterated my party like in no time at all because Cloud and Tifa needed to get close, and it just poisoned them into oblivion. Yeah, so it's like, yeah, there's those instances where it's like I've got to take a step back and actually think about things, which I appreciate. So
again, I'm diverting the conversation. You in that area, you've done that side quest, that like almost sandy area outside Midgar. People have said like, oh, there's a part there where they play Zack's theme. I'm like,
I haven't heard.
Is it that part or is it the other side of Midgar? It's apparently there's like a part where, you know, obviously where Zack does his last fight, whatever, and the music just changes. And I'm like, where? I'm dying to find where the spot is. Is it on the other side of the map? I just haven't got there yet. Or is it on this side?
Yeah, I need to go find that now because I have no idea where that is. Or at least I didn't realize if it had played. Yeah. So it's like, I mean, yeah, spoilers for Remake or Intermission, I guess, but he's out there. He's somewhere doing something.
He's the first person you control in the game, very briefly.
Yeah, quite literally.
I was like, what is going on here?
That was interesting to me. I was like, wow, okay, they're really leaning into this angle now. Yeah,
I know.
It's going to be very interesting within the context of the game's like first chapter of you know, like Cloud recalling what happened in Nibelheim and Tifa's comment on that at the end. I was just like, oh, really?
Interesting. Yeah.
I do really, really love the interplay between Tifa and Aerith in this game so far. That's
great.
They are so cool together. They just like,
I think,
absolute best friends, and
just,
I love
just
it.
The synergy so across good. I mean, it, again, it's funny because, and it's exciting because we both early days, right? And then again, 20 hours, it sounds ridiculous, but that's early days in the overall story. And like, you really see these moments of the party just having these moments, like Tifa and Aerith at the beginning 100%, but like, I'm also starting to see like play between Barrett and Red 13. I'm like, yes, bring yes. on all the other party members. I want to see how they'll engage with each other. It's,
I actually like Barrett a lot in this game because
he's
like,
he's, yeah.
In the first game, he's very hardened and very, you know, like he's got a purpose and he's got a goal and nothing is going to dissuade him from that. But here he's like, I think his belief has been shaken a little bit by what happened in Midgar, but he's still very dedicated to the job at hand. And I don't know, it's just like a bit of looseness about him that's really fun. I was asking Shani the other day because she was watching me play. And because she's walked into the room twice now, and both times, the first time she was like, "What is this?" And I was like, "Final Fantasy VII." And she's like, watching it. I think I was in calm then, and I made a silly joke. I was like, "Do you think this man with these noodle arms could pick up this sword?" And I was referring to Cloud. And she was like, "Absolutely not."
100%
not. Probably most humans in the world could not lift that sword. No. I was like, "Yeah, that's probably fair." So then yesterday I'm playing again and I'm riding around this fucking barren wasteland on a chocobo, and she looks at it. She's like, "What game is this?" And I was like, "It's still Final Fantasy." She's like, "What do you mean?" I'm like, "Yeah, I know. It's quite different." And then I showed her Red on the chocobo. She's like,
"It is.
That's stupid." And I was like, "Yeah, it is pretty stupid. It's phenomenal. I love it."
I was listening to the the kind of funny review of this game yesterday because I just missed it. And I know, you know, like Tim and them are huge Final Fantasy fans.
Massive.
And
yeah.
They made such a good point of like Final Fantasy 16. One thing they missed, they compared a lot to the game because it was a recent Final Fantasy, saying like they love Final Fantasy 16, but one thing they missed was that it was very serious. No room for jokes, really, where it's like, no, we are the Game of Thrones of Final Fantasies. We're super serious. This is some real shit. Whereas Final Fantasy VII and a lot of other Final Fantasies, there is an element of like, the world's going to end, but also we are going to have some ridiculous, funny shit happen. And yeah. I feel that this game is, they lean into that. I mean, Red riding a chocobo is like...
It's the funniest thing on earth. It really is.
I can just imagine that the meeting that happened, we're like, cool, we're going to like talk about riding chocobos. And somebody put up the hand like, so can we have Red riding a chocobo? Like, can we show this? Are we going to have, are we going to
so
show all the party members?
It.
And if we are, can we show Red riding a chocobo? And it's funny
just
is that
so funny.
I know there are other moments coming up in the game where like Red is doing things when originally like it's silly. I'm like, but how will they show that in this game? I cannot wait.
No, but you're right. There is a sense of levity in this game that's like welcomed, and it's not. I don't think it's forced or put into any, you know, situation where it's not meant to be. Like, I think in Calm when Shinra decides to like invade, and that's like the first moment where you actually get to see the grasslands for the first time. It's like your introduction to the open world. You're up in the clock tower with Aerith and you see this shit unfolding. So you run down and you meet up with the rest of the party. And Barrett's like, "Where were you guys?" And Aerith's like, "We were on a date." And Tifa's like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, guys, do you realize what's happening around you? Like, just calm down. Like, it's so
That's
good.
Great.
It's so, so good. It. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did ask Shani how she thinks Barrett sleeps with a gun on his hand. And she made a good point. She's like, "Can't he take it off?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I've never seen him take it off."
I think he must be able to take it off because I mean,
when he was sleeping in Calm, he was sleeping in a chair with it on.
Listen,
I rest my case.
We can get in the weeds of this game, but the fact that nobody gets under the covers for starters, gets unchanged.
Yeah, no, that's insanity.
Shower, like no, nothing. Everyone
they're getting
like,
into bed with their outdoor clothes.
Yeah,
it's
I'm,
not
I'm just
okay.
climbing into bed and then like climb onto.
Cloud
the bed.
Sleeps with his boots on. It's
what a,
ridiculous.
What a mad lad.
Absolute mad lad.
My God.
I think lastly, the one thing I want to say is Queen's Blood fucking 100%, rules.
100%. I was just going
to
say.
What a game.
So,
what
yeah,
a game.
But one thing, some people, this has been like either a solid point or a sore point for people is that the number of mini games in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. There's a lot. And it's not really a mini game. Apart from the moving the vacuum cleaner around, which can go down a hole, I haven't had any issues with any of the mini games. Like, I've loved them. And Queen's Blood, I think, is probably like the first big one people encounter, and it's a through line throughout the rest of the game, because you will find other people to play Queen's Blood. And in true Final Fantasy fashion, it is a really, really good card game.
It's like a solid,
super simple, like really easy to understand. Because my thing is
short as well, I think.
Yeah, my thing is almost like, oh, do I really want to learn like another game and the complexities? And then you play a game like, it's actually like, it's really simple to understand. And as you keep playing harder opponents and you start unlocking more cards, then you're like, oh, okay, like, holy shit, this game's got depth. And I mean, again, early days, I haven't unlocked that many cards, but I'm already seeing like, holy shit, there are some things you can do in this game, and it's wild. It's really good.
No, there's like early game strats that are like so useful already. Sorry, there's a catcher. and like even the early cards like start exposing some of that complexity, like, oh, okay, this card can claim these two blocks, but it's also going to empower this block like on the other end of the board. But you've got to be careful because that empowers enemies too, so like you can't get reckless with that sort of thing. It's super, super good. It's a nice to and fro of like lane control, but also like space control. Like you need to use your cards wisely to not give your opponent opportunity to move, but also ensure that you have enough points within a lane to win that lane. And I think it's incredibly smart. Like the best sorts of games, like especially board games, this is essentially a board card game, like are ones that, like you said, are super simple to understand, but just have loads of mechanical depth within those limited moves. And I think Queen's Blood nails that. I mean, they've already said they're looking at the possibility of bringing it out as like a standalone game, and I would jump a pole. Like Gwent became its own game eventually, but I never really got into Gwent when I played The Witcher because I found the matches took too long. This one is a complete opposite. Every time I see that marker on the map, I'm like going to play Queen's Blood. I'm so into it. Like, there's a side quest I'm pursuing now, but I lost Queen's Blood card, and I'm just like in it. I'm so into that quest. It's a good game.
Good game, which we'll probably spend the next 3 years talking about, because it's gonna take
at this rate,
a long time.
This rate, this is gonna be Final Fantasy 16 for like 3 months, so it's gonna be similar.
Nice.
Cool. It's a good game, that good old Final Fantasy. Another game we've both played quite a bit actually is Balatro, which I think if you listen to the last podcast, We didn't even know this game existed.
Oh my god. Last podcast was a lifetime ago.
No, I'm pretty certain we had not started playing this game.
No, I don't
think kind of like, it caught a lot of popularity during the Steam Next Fest, like the demo thing. Like people played the demo and they were like, oh, there is something here.
Yeah.
And then it came out like 2 weeks later and it was like, yeah, this game is just fucking incredible. So if you don't know, Balatro is a sort of, it's a poker-themed roguelite that works off of the fundamental rules of, you know, five-card poker hands. But it is essentially a very light deck builder slash very hardcore roguelite that really bends the rules of what poker and card games can be by virtue of, you know, random modifiers and multipliers and effect cards and this and that are, you know, how you construct a successful run. So each round is called, or each level is called like an ante. And within an ante, you have a small blind, a big blind, and then a boss. And for each of those, you need to achieve a particular score by playing a set number of hands. You have a specific number of hands that you can play, and then a specific number of discards you can play, where you can like basically mulligan cards from your hand and get new ones. And you're trying to construct different poker hands that all have different multipliers and scores attached, while synergizing with things like joker cards that buff certain poker hands or buff certain suits or have really fucking bizarre abilities, as well as consumable arcana cards and these planet cards that kind of buff particular other poker hands, like straights. They'll say they'll change the level of the multiplier from 1 to 2 or something like that.
Yeah.
It is one of the most addictive card games I've ever played in my life.
100%.
I love poker, but I don't think you need to love or even understand poker to really play this game. Like, I've heard a lot of people being like, when they actually divorced their brain from the idea of this is a poker game and associated it more with just a card roguelike, that's when they really started unlocking how this game functions.
Yeah. I think even,
and I think it's just so smart.
Even the poker thing, like, the only thing you, I mean, I wouldn't even say you have to know, but the only thing that you really need to know about poker is just what hands do. Like,
yeah, what they are.
Oh, sorry, not what they are, what they are. Like a pair, three of a kind of. And like, even that said, those are very easy to learn. Like, you don't need to learn the fundamentals of poker, just understanding, you know, what hands can you play. The moment you know that, I mean, Balatro's, then you can just play. You can figure out a whole lot of other things that are completely unrelated to poker.
I mean, you can do bizarre things where you can be like, cool, I'm going to, you know, early on you've got access to a joker that really buffs spade cards. And you're like, cool, I'm going to build this run around spades, which means I'm going to focus on flushes.
Yeah.
But it also means that when I have the opportunity to add cards, because you can add cards to your deck by buying them, so you're not constricted to your 52 cards. By the same token, you can also destroy cards. Mm. So in a run like that, you'd be like, cool, I'm going to add as many spades as I can, and I'm going to destroy every other suit that I can. Mm. Or try and transform cards into like suitless ones where they can be applied as any suit, you know, stuff like that. So it's like you are altering the fundamental makeup of this deck. You're not constricted to 52 cards and the base collection within there. And you can really go far by just honing in on one or two specific hand types or strategies. And that's how the game functions. If you're trying to spread yourself too thin, like any roguelite, you're just going to be like really good at nothing.
Yeah.
And Balatro functions in the same way. So the only thing that bugs me about this game sometimes is, so the boss always has a specific like modifier or ability, and you are made aware of that ability when you start the ante. So you essentially have two chances to try and like either change your deck to adapt to that boss or do something about that boss. In some cases you can like skip a blind. So skip the opportunity to gain more money and visit the shop and get like a token in exchange. And that token sometimes changes the boss blind, like it will completely alter it. But sometimes you just can't, like you don't get that opportunity because of the way the randomness works.
Yeah.
And you don't have the ability to change your deck in time, and the boss just becomes like an impossible task. So some of them are like, I think, quite aggressive. Like you can only play one hand or like a certain suite of cards is debuffed. So like if you've built your entire run around spades and this boss is like, yo, spade cards are debuffed, you're fucked. Like there is nothing you can do about that unless you re-roll that boss blind.
Yeah.
So I find that is a bit like disheartening when you're like one ante away from winning and then you get whacked with that and it just feels unfair. But other than that, I think the game is pretty well balanced. It skirts a fine line of making you feel overpowered, but also like you have to think about what you're doing very carefully all the time.
I think, like as much as I love the game, there are one or two things that are like frustrating. And the one you mentioned is the boss blinds. But also I found that it's a roguelite, but there are things missing that I feel would make it it's a discussion that can happen because, I mean, maybe a part of the game is just luck and whatever. But, like, in a typical roguelite, you get a permanent upgrades, for example, where Balatro just has none of that. So, like, as an example, in a typical roguelite, you might say, like, okay, cool, you can spend currency to get, like, your health will be permanently increased by 5%, or you'll start with... five gold instead of with zero. And it's like small incremental things that slowly build up that make the runs like easier until, you know, and whatever, like I'm getting into the weeds there. Bellator has none of that. And I feel that sometimes you can start a run and immediately like this isn't going to work and you just restart. Yeah. I mean, and sometimes even by the second or third anti, like I'm just not getting, like I'm not building the right sort of deck. And I feel like I don't know how they would address that or if they even have to address that. Like maybe the game is fine the way it is, but there's no way to like mitigate that. There's no way to like sort of, if I mean, like there's a huge element of randomness and luck where I think the more you play the game, the more jokers you unlock, the bigger the pool of cards becomes. So it's like if you know, oh, there's a joker that does X and a joker that does Y and a joker that does Z, but I'm never going to really get them all three together. It's unlikely I'll get them all at the same time. It becomes difficult to start to plan a sort of deck you'd like to do. But again, like, is that fair for me to criticize the game? Maybe that's part of it, where it is, it's a card game. Like, there are elements of luck and randomness. So that's part of the theme of it. so it's like, excuse me. It's weird because it's like, it is a criticism, but like, I'm not like I kind of get it as well, but I, like I don't know if you agree or disagree with that.
No, I get what you mean, especially with regards to the jokers, because there are like 150 of them, and like it's a weird balance where like I feel like the game really opens up once you have you've unlocked a lot of them, because the possibilities of them are like, some of them are extreme, some of them just absolutely change the game. Like if you run into an instance where you're able to run like a joker that reduces the requirement for a straight from 5 cards to 4 cards, and then a joker that lets you skip cards in between in a straight, like you're
golden.
You are rolling through rounds. Like you're playing like 4 card straights, but like they are a complete mishmash of cards. It's ridiculous. Yeah. I think there's combinations like that to be found all over, but I do agree that with 150 you might be like, oh, I really like that run where I combine these two things, but there's no way of you to actually sort of manifest that. It's completely random. Whereas with a game like Hades, you know, a big portion of that game is the weapon you choose, and you know that you can build around that with particular abilities, even though they deliver to you randomly. So yeah, I understand that. I think where Bellatra kind of does that sort of is with the new decks. So the more you play and the more objectives you complete or the more runs you complete, you unlock new decks, and each of those decks has a different starting ability.
Yeah.
So like the initial ones are like, oh, one of them gives you one additional hand. The other one gives you one additional discard. One gives you like, I think $10 to start. But then they start getting like interesting, where like one will give you a planet card that is activated from the get-go. So that already starts defining your run, you know, from the beginning. So, and there's loads of decks to unlock. So I haven't done, a lot of them. So I think that kind of bridges the gap. But I do get what you're saying. Like, this is predominantly random, and you've just got to work within that. And there will be runs that... I have had runs that within Ante 2, I'm like, I can already tell I'm struggling to hit the chip value, and this is not going to go well. Yeah.
That said, I've had like really once in a blue moon where I've had jokers and cards, and I'm like, oh, this isn't really the run I wanted to have, and I don't know if it's going to work. I'm just going to keep playing. I mean, I think the first or second time I finished the game was done with pairs. Like, I just had...
Yeah.
I had a joker that like I can't remember what the jokers were, but I ended up just literally playing. I had a joker where you got a multiplier for playing 3 cards or less, which is like absurd. Like, why would you play 3 cards or less? And I had like jokers that buffed pairs, and I just ran with it. Like, though, that was just
that's a good combo.
A happy accident where I had this winning run with like 2 or 3 jokers that I just stumbled upon. So like, it is a weird thing. I get it. Like, I think
it's like you would have never played that sort of deck without the circumstances.
So like, I acknowledge part of the charm is like, you don't know what the combos are. Like, sometimes you are forced to try and figure out how to make a run work. And again, like, I don't know what the answer is. I feel like there could be you're right. Maybe the decks themselves are the determining factor, or like the way you sort of mitigate that. Yeah. Job. All that said.
I don't know.
All that said, I love this game. Like, absolutely.
Mm.
Let me tell you, on the plane to your wedding, this is all I played. On the way plane back, this is pretty much all I played. Like, I was hooked on
this game. It's really good on Switch because I like playing on Switch because of the touchscreen.
Mm.
Like, I just use the touchscreen to tap cards. It feels really good. Mm. I mean, I've bought this game on two platforms. I have it on PC as well. So I think the one thing that, as soon as I realized this, or as soon as I, the game definitely did tell me about this, but I never really like kept it in my mind, was that Jokers are played from left to right. And when you combine that knowledge with, there is a difference between adding to your multiplier and multiplying your multiplier. Yeah,
big difference.
So like if you have a bunch of cards that add to the multiplier, they need to be on the left.
Yeah.
Because then when you hit a joker that multiplies your multiplier, it's a much bigger number that it's multiplying by. And I never differentiated between those two. So I think I had a mishmash of adding and multiplying, and I was never really optimizing that in a way. And once I did that, oh my God, like runs became a completely different ball game from there. So yeah, keep that in mind if you're playing. It's a very subtle but very important difference between the two.
It's a good game.
Game's good. Really, game's good. I really enjoy it. It's also just cheap. It's like $120 bucks.
Super cheap.
Yeah. And it's so cheap, it's like a no-brainer to me.
What I really like about it is that it's like, I feel it's a game you can go back to whenever. Like, I'll pick it up in a year, 2 years, 3 years, and it's a very good card game. Like, it's just...
There's no, like, muscle memory associated with it. So, it's not like when you go back to Hades, which I have done many times, and I'm like, I've got to play one or two runs to just remember how the fuck I'm moving around. Yeah, it's just a game where it's like, cool, I've got to remember how jokers work, and that's it, you know. And it's pretty easy to do that. Yeah, how do cards work? What is this heart suite, you know?
Yeah.
It's a great game, and I would very easily recommend it to anyone
who
is interested in roguelites.
It's coming to mobile as well at some stage. So
yeah, they did say, because the developer said that the sales numbers have been extremely good, so they're thinking about they are busy working on a mobile version. That's awesome to me. So yeah.
Good. Cool. Game. Balatro.
Would you like to chat about our final game?
No, let's go. No, I'm kidding. So I can very briefly touch on another game. I've been playing Princess Peach Showtime. So this is when did this come out? Like a week or two ago. This is
A
new Nintendo game centered on the one and only Princess Peach, who typically is, you know, the damsel in distress in, you know, Mario games. And I don't know if this can't be her first solo game, surely. I'm sure over the many decades.
It is.
What?
It is. It's insane. That's what's such a big deal as well, because it's like the very first one.
Yeah, that blows my mind, because I'm like, surely at some point there's been a Princess Peach game. Well, with that knowledge in mind, this is the first Princess Peach game. And just off the cuff, it reminds me very much, like, it makes me think that Mario and Kirby had a baby. In terms of how the game works. So if you're watching the video version of the podcast, you've got gameplay up, you can see it's just Princess Peach running around, and you've got this ability called Sparkle. I think it's called Sparkle, where you basically spin your ribbon, a ribbon around, and you can, you know, attack enemies and change things in the environment. That's like at its core, that's what the game is. And there's some light platforming. Where the Kirby element comes in is, you'll see later in the footage, that you can get different abilities or different kinds of peaches. So for example, the first thing they give you is like Sword Fighter Peach. I can actually just skip ahead in the
Sword Fighter Peach.
Sword Fighter
Peach. Oh, that's where she's got the
there we go. Bam.
Yeah.
Which then
looks like a pirate.
No, it's like more like a pirate or a musketeer.
A musketeer, that's actually better, yeah.
Sword Fighter Peach. So what happens is, and now I can no longer use my ribbon, but I have a whole different skill set. Very much like a Kirby game where, you know, I can still jump or whatever, but I've got a sword to do just sword combos. And this, I mean, again, like I've only played maybe an hour, 2 hours of this game. And there are a couple of these. Like there's a Ninja Peach, there's a Patisserie Peach, which is more.
I'm sorry?
Which is a more.
Patisserie Peach.
Where more.
Does she throw croissants around?
I wish. No, so that particular ability, those game, that level was centered around almost like a mini game where you make cakes and, you know, nice pastries.
Interesting.
It's an interesting game. I can't tell you it's done anything that I've never seen before. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but again, like I'm still early days. I can't really comment on. I don't know how long it is. I don't know how often do I get to use Sword Fighter Peach. Is it this one time? Is it two or three times? Like I don't actually know. But it is a cool little platformer, and I'm very keen to keep playing. And I'm sorry that I can't really talk too much about it yet. I just haven't had the chance to really sink my teeth into it.
How dare you?
How dare I?
Yeah, it's cool. I think I've seen a lot of comparisons to, you know, the Kirby games because I think it is targeting that sort of demographic. It's kind of breezy and easygoing and very simple to understand. And I think if you're coming in, you're looking for like the complexity of a Mario Odyssey, you're not going to get that.
No.
But it's cool to see Peach in her own game. Hopefully this means more in the future.
One thing I will commend, again, if you're watching the video feed, you'll notice that a lot of it is like a stage or backstage.
She's performing.
So yeah, like the whole premise is that, you know, you Peach and Toads have gone to watch a show and like, but bad people, naughty people have taken over the production.
so you need to save the production?
Yeah, you're basically saving the production by like playing through the productions. So why I find that very interesting is that it just aesthetically it makes for some cool stage design, like literally, no pun intended. It's like you'll see it's almost like there's flair with a lot of the stuff, like almost like it is a production where, oh, you know, like you're watching the footage now, there's a spotlight on Peach, there's red curtains at the back, and it leads into interesting transitions and just effects that are very unique to this game. That's pretty cool.
It does look neat. Like I like the little smoke effect on the stage and the spotlight, like you said. It's quite distinct. That's cool. I wonder how many different abilities or different Peach, like, costumes she has that change how you play as you go.
I imagine there's a few, but I mean, like, I've seen three or four, and I'm like, surely you're not just going to have Sword Fighter Peach through one level. I'm sure there'll be more of her in future. Mm. But again, like, I don't know to how deep do we go? Do we go to Kirby levels of like, oh my god, there are 20 different Kirbys in this game, there's 20 different Peaches in this game, or is it like just six abilities and that's that? Which is not a bad thing. It's just I don't
definitely
know.
Won't be on the scale of like a Mario Wonder where there's like a billion Wonder.
But it's
abilities.
Funny when I started playing this game, I immediately thought of Wonder because I'm like, oh my god, like am I gonna get a unique ability every level? Because that'd be very cool, but I don't think it's to that degree. It's a cool Switch game, and I'm very keen to keep playing more. I will report back at a future stage.
Cool. I think that's it. I don't think there's anything else we've been playing. I mean, like I said, there's a lot we still have to get to. But as far as I know, like, from April now, it's kind of slowing down a bit. Like the release schedule in April is definitely like much, much lower than this past
What, you're not
March
excited for Stellar
February.
Blade?
I mean, the previews got me interested at the very least. And they're like, this is more like Sekiro. And I was like, tell me
what?
More. Say less, but tell me more.
Yeah, I think you're right, maybe. We're out of the, like, the beginning of year rush.
Yeah. Now it's like sort of waiting till June.
Yeah. Oh my god, June. Give me that Elden Ring DLC.
I actually saw it on PlayStation yesterday, on the PSN store. It's like only $700. It's like
the DLC.
I will do that. Yeah, I'll gladly do that. The funny thing is, I didn't play on PlayStation. I played on Xbox. So we're going to have to buy the DLC individually.
How did that happen? No, well, because I've got it on PlayStation, which means you've got it on PlayStation, which means the DLC will work. Surely?
True, but I don't have a playthrough on PlayStation.
You got to play the game again, though. That's...
With all this enormous amount of time that I just run. Have.
Just go to the bosses. Jesus. It'll take you like 20 hours.
I need to actually double check because I do recall playing it on Xbox, but I'm not entirely sure why I chose that or how that ended up happening, because we got a... sure we got a review code. I must have just purchased it on Xbox.
You know what I think happened is I think we didn't get a review code on launch, so we might have bought it on PlayStation and then like the following Monday or Tuesday, then I think we got a review code on Xbox.
On Xbox. That might have been the... Or we might have only got it on Xbox, and then considering you don't have one, we were probably like, okay, we'll just go half on the PlayStation version. Yeah, it was probably something like that. Mm. And I probably ended up playing on Xbox because at the time, I remember it ran better on Xbox in its performance mode. So I was like, well, I'm just going to do that then. I also played Sekiro on Xbox, so I'm just used to that control scheme on Xbox, you know.
No, you didn't play Sekiro on Xbox, and I know you didn't.
Yes, I did.
You played it on PlayStation. 100%. You played on PlayStation because you borrowed my copy of Sekiro. 100%.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You are right. I think I still have it.
Yeah, I'll give it back. No, I don't know.
No, you're right. I did play it on PlayStation. You are correct. Yeah.
Hilarious.
That game is good. I should go play that again. What a game.
All the time we have. I am sorely tempted to do another Elden Ring playthrough. Just very quick, like literally run from A to Z. Just tickle.
Just do another Bloodborne one instead. It's only 9 hours, according to you.
Hey, I did it. It was. It was 10 or so hours. I played Bloodborne A to Z.
It's kind of nuts that you can do that to that game, because you definitely cannot do that to their later games. Like Dark Souls 3, you can't do that, I'm almost sure.
I mean, maybe
Elden Ring, you definitely can't. You played Bloodborne in a standard way. You weren't like exploiting it, is what I mean.
Oh, no, but Elden Ring, I'm telling you, because you've played the game, you know exactly where to go, and you do get enough experience from bosses, I think you could arguably get through it in like 10, 15 hours. No fancy tricks, nothing. Just you doing your thing.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe not. But I also haven't played it in a long time, so like remembering what I was doing.
Your craft.
Yeah, maybe. It's been like 2 years almost. So
yeah.
Good game, that. Good game. Really good game. But that has been episode 249 of Checkpoint Chat. I genuinely can't tell you when the next one of this will be, but given that things are easing up in terms of like personal life, maybe we'll try to get more on a regular schedule once again. Regular schedule, yeah. But we'll keep you updated on that. I mean, I'm quite enjoying these ones where we get to chat about a lot of games in a lot more depth. Rather than like just trying to fit something in every single week. So, and I hope you are enjoying that too as a listener, because I think it's more beneficial in that way.
I think, just to echo what you're saying, I don't know when the next episode will be, but I think at least for the foreseeable future, we are going to sort of record when there's stuff to talk about. Like, for example, I don't know if there'll be an episode next week, because we would have probably just played a bit more Final Fantasy,
and it's well,
we're going to talk about it every week for the next 5 weeks. We used to once upon a time, maybe not. We'll discuss, but we'll keep you posted on socials. Apologies for the long drought of episodes. We were too busy getting married, and last weekend was my wedding anniversary. That's why we didn't record.
We're doing insane.
Doing some
just cannot stuff. Believe it's been 5 years.
Like, what is time?
What is time? Hey, crazy.
And now we're gonna go have a nice long weekend, because we're recording on Good Friday, which I don't think we actually mentioned. All Good Friday, it's a Good Friday.
Yeah, it is. It is a Good Friday. You'll hear this on. Easter is there a name for the Monday? Easter Monday?
Good,
I don't know.
Day of Good Hope. There is a name for it. I can't think what it. Day of Goodwill.
I don't know. The day after it? Jesus came. He unalived himself.
Oh my God, unalived himself. What is it Easter Monday? Easter Monday. I think that's what it's like colloquially called. But there's an actual
name for it.
I don't know. It's I don't
Boxing
know.
Day. Jesus is Boxing Day.
Oh my God. Definitely not. Whatever. Easter Monday.
Man woke up and was like, man, I want to go box. Yeah, that's definitely what they said there. 100%. Before I piss anyone else off, yeah, hope you had a good Easter week and hope it was safe. And we'll be back relatively soonish, our rate. We'll just keep an eye on social media and we'll have other games to talk about for sure.
Yeah.
Until then, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you then. Goodbye.